Hi, this is Dan Sheridan. It's a pleasure once again spending time with you in the Word of God. We're going through the Old Testament line by line, studying all of our favorite topics and seeking answers to all the tough questions that we have in the context and flow of the Word of God. And today we are in Genesis 18. We left off in verse 20 last time. We'll just pick it up right from there again from verse 20 and move right along. And if you hear some noise in the background, it's probably people outside doing their lawns here. It is early evening, but people are doing their lawns because it's that time of year and it was a beautiful day. But I love the good the sound of a good lawnmower in the background and fresh cut grass. So let's not don't bother me too much. I hope it don't bother you if you can hear it on your end. All right, so verse 20 we read, "And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great." Remember, he's talking to Abraham. And because their sin is very grievous. Now, notice their sin is very grievous. Now, it's customary just to think of the sexual sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. And a lot of people love to preach, you know, people preaching messages. People love to preach messages. And I don't preach anymore. I used to do that when I was a minister, a pastor. But as soon as I had more light on the Word of God, I gave up preaching. And now I just discuss the Word of God with people and talk to people about it. And that's just the way it goes. I don't go to the Bible to find to find content for sermons or anything like that. We're just here discussing the Word of God, and I think that's the best way. And so they would, you know, a lot of people will use Sodom and Gomorrah to get out their angry messages, and they want to preach about hell and against sin, and they go out to Sodom and Gomorrah and try to relate it to America today or whatever country you're from. And that's unfortunate, and you usually get it wrong. Most people focus on the sin of Sodom as the sexual thing. And true, they went after strange flesh. There was the forced rape. But according to Ezekiel 16:49-50, and it might be good right now to turn there to Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 49-50, to see what the sin of Sodom is. And it's great, according to what we just read in here in Genesis. And it says, verse 49 says, "Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness." Or one translation, it has security of ease was in her and her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. Those are probably the ones who are crying. The cry of oppression. "And they were haughty and committed abomination." Notice that's last. The abomination. The abomination is probably referring to their forced rape in Genesis 18, in 19, that we're reading about. And so, anyway, but notice this. If people, and I think the problem with Sodom and Gomorrah, because we have pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness, and not strengthening the hand of the poor and the needy, and haughtiness. Why is it that people just focus on the abomination part? Do you ever wonder? Maybe it's because pride, fullness of bread, security of ease, and not straining the hand of the poor or the needy is the foundation maybe of society today, and in Christian society especially, where it's all about money and high standards of living and things like that. It's just something to think about. Maybe that's why it's called misdirection. Let's not talk about the main sin of Sodom and Gomorrah. Let's just talk about the sins that we don't like, or the ones we like to rail against. So he says here, because, verse back to Genesis 18, "And the Lord said, because of the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great." That's the cry of injustice. The people, and as we just read about, probably the poor and needy, who are being oppressed. And by the time the judgment on the city comes, they're probably all gone, because the judge of all the earth is going to do right. So when God sends out judgment, he's not going to wipe out the good or the oppressed. He's not going to do that, because he's the judge of all the earth who does right. And so the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great because their sin is very grievous. We just read what their sin was in Ezekiel. "I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it." So there are those who are crying out, and probably crying out to God. And it seems that they were all gone at this point and wiped out. And he goes, "Which is come unto me, I will see according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know." Now, some object to this language. Some object to the language of Jehovah himself saying, "I'm going to go down and find something out." And And they have this Calvinistic idea of God that, you know, they say, well, God knows everything and God determines everything. And they use very high and holy language. They try to be guardians of God's characters as if God appointed them to be the those who defend his character. And when they do that and they add all kinds of ideas about God, and they make those the foundation of fellowship. And usually when people have fellowship standards, it's standards they've set up that are outside the Word of God. They want to have, they add a little extra barrier to make them stand out. But the question is here, does God know everything? And my response is, God knows what he wants to know. And here, he's taking knowledge and acting accordingly. And this is what God is doing. This is how God has recorded it for us. And he goes to great lengths to record these things for us. And so let's not explain this away because of some notion we have about God. And so let God explain himself to us. Let's not try to explain him for him. So God says here he's going to find out something and act accordingly. And it says, verse 22, and the men turned their faces from thence and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. So the picture we get here is the three men are standing with Abraham, and one of them is the Lord and Jehovah. And he's talking to Abraham, and as he says this stuff to him, the two men take off, and there's Abraham standing with the third who stayed behind. And those two men are messengers. And it says here, and Abraham drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Now, I want you to notice how casual this is. I'm sure Abram showed due reverence to Jehovah here. But it's a casual conversation. Notice what the Lord doesn't say. The Lord doesn't say, oh, shut up and submit. How dare you question me? I am the deity. I do as I please. How dare you question me? No, that's not how it is at all. Abraham has a conversation with God. He has a conversation. It's a very normal one. He's using his noggin. He's using his common sense to talk and reason with God. He's trying to find something out. Now, I've done that before. Back in my hellfire days, I used to yell at God. I was so upset about the concept of eternal conscious torment, and my mind couldn't grasp it. My mind couldn't grasp it, and I would yell at God, saying, God, how can you possibly burn people for eternity to expect me to earn a living and think about, you know, taking care of kids and on a mortgage and, you know, paying the electric bill while people are behind me dropping into hell every day? And I would yell at God. I was angry. I'd say, God, I'm angry. How can you possibly do this? You're terrible. You're still my God, but I'm going to, you know. And so I went through this whole, and that process changed me, being able to talk to God like that. You know, I think God prefers honesty than he does pious talk. And Abraham here, he had a sense of justice. And he says, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? And remember, man is made in the image of God, and he has a natural sense of justice. And so we shouldn't dismiss that. Peradventure there be 50 righteous, he says, within the city. And so he says, and it's possible. People can be righteous. And he says, wilt thou also destroy, not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? And the term righteous here, it means exactly what it means, people who do right. And there are people that do right. So Calvinistic type doctrine is going to have a real hard time with passages like this, where God talks about getting to know something, where Abraham is having a conversation with God using his reason with him, and then God not yelling back at Abraham telling him to shut up, and the fact that there are people who do right. So verse 24, peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Will thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, or lawless. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And here he is called the judge of all the earth, and he does right. Abraham knew justice. He knew right and wrong, and he knew that God was a judge. God is all three branches, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial, and he judges. And he does right. He's the judge of all the earth. Now, today, it's all of grace. So we do not see God physically or, outwardly judging anyone, and we can never attribute any acts or anything to God's judgment. When God judges, he makes it absolutely abundantly clear that it is he who is doing the judging. But we live in a day of grace, where the heavens are silent, and Ephesians explains that silence in a time of grace like this. But here he's the judge of all the earth. That means he's all three branches of government, as it were. And Abraham had a sense of justice. He knew that it would be wrong for God to judge a certain way. And, you know, as I mentioned a moment ago about those days when when I believed in hellfire, something about the nature of that judgment just didn't seem right. It didn't seem to fit. And even though I didn't understand the scriptures at that point, my natural sense of justice, because I love God, I'm made in his image, and he's put, you know, certain ideas in us inherently as creatures of God, as people made in his image, and we all have this. And I said, how could it be possible that God can judge people for all eternity by burning them for all eternity? Well, it turns out he doesn't. And when you study the scriptures, you realize the judge of all the earth actually does right. And that his judgments are corrective, and it has nothing to do with eternal torment. And his judgments are right, and they lead to good things. And so using that same logic of Abraham led me, as I searched the scriptures, to find out that that the character of God has been greatly slandered by eternal conscious torment, and that's why I have nothing to do with that nonsense anymore, because the judge of all the earth shall do right. Abraham was right. Now, and again, notice the Lord doesn't say, hey, no talk back, Abraham, you just shut up and submit. No, no, that's not how it worked. God wanted Abraham to use his noggin. He wanted him to use his reason, and that's how it would happen here, and they had this discussion. In verse 26, the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes, all of it. And then Abraham answered and said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. And he's just using humility here in front of Jehovah. He said, peradventure there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for the lack of 5? And he said, if I find there 40 and 5, I will not destroy it. By the way, I just made a comment. I want to look at something here. I said, in under verse 26, I said, compare Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 1. And I'm going to do that real quickly here and see what I meant, what my thinking was at the time. And, there's a reference here in Jeremiah 5, verse 1. Run ye to and fro through the outskirts of Jerusalem, and see now, and know and seek in the market or the open places of concourse thereof. And if ye can find a man, if there be any that execute the judgment and seeketh the truth, then I will pardon it. So that's the idea here in Genesis, what Abraham's doing. He's trying to find people in the city who do right so that the Yahweh won't destroy it. And I'm sure that Abraham has in mind Lot, his nephew's over there, and I bet you he's thinking, well, I bet you Lot's there. Hopefully he's been a good influence, and if he's been a good influence, then there'll be a handful of people, and God will spare the whole place because of Lot's testimony there. Yeah. And we're going to see that Lot didn't get anywhere in Sodom. He wasn't able to influence anyone. Lot, the righteous man. So anyway, we're in verse 29. And he spake unto him yet again and said, peradventure there shall be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it if I for 40's sake. And he said unto him, O let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure there shall 30 be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. Now again, notice the language. Verse 21, I will go down and find out if, and I will know. Verse 26, if I find. Verse 28, if I find. Verse 30, if I find. You mean he doesn't know already? Well, again, I'll answer the question by saying God knows exactly what he wants to know. And here again, he's taking knowledge of something and he's acting accordingly. And this is exactly how God has revealed himself to us in this section here. And he said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. Peradventure there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, O let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way as soon as he left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. Now notice it's communing with Abraham, and basically what was going on here? Well, the Lord came and sat down with Abraham, had a meal, and they had a conversation. There were no stained glasses, no intermediary priests or ministers to pretend to speak for God. It was just God speaking directly with Abraham, and they had communion, and that was it. All right, now we come to chapter 19, and it says, and there came the two angels, or the messengers to Sodom. So Jehovah stayed behind, talked to Abraham, and these two went to Sodom and at even. And this goes to show you that he's getting to know this through the two angels, the two messengers. When it says, if I find, well, the Lord sent his two messengers to give the report. And there came the two messengers to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. That would be like saying that he sat in the courthouse or the seat of government, because that's what the gates were in those days. They were the seats of government. And so Lot sat in the seat of government in the gate of Sodom, which means he had a position. When it says he sat in the gate of Sodom, that meant he was a public official. This is an official position. So Lot became a public official, and he was not able to influence anyone in Sodom. And so, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them and bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And just like Abraham had done, he saw these two men coming, and he said, I'm gonna show some hospitality. And he said, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go on your ways. And notice here, there's no thee, like we saw in the last chapter. There were three, and Abraham knew that the third one had some special power. He knew it was Jehovah. Well, here it's only the two, and it's just you, plural. He's speaking to the two of them. And they said, nay, but we will abide in the street all night. Oh, that's something. They were refusing Lot's hospitality. That says something. And maybe it's a little rebuke to what Lot was doing here. What are you doing here in Sodom? What are you trying to do here, Lot? You shouldn't be here. And verse 3, and he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into the house, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. So they come in, Lot convinced them to come in, they come in, and he prepares them a great meal. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. Now here's this phrase here, all the people. Now, this did not mean everyone, because when you get to verse 14, his two sons-in-law weren't part of this. So this just means that people from everywhere came around, from everywhere to do this. In Matthew's gospel, when it says all Jerusalem came to be baptized of John, that didn't mean everyone in Jerusalem. It just meant a lot of people from that area. And so we have to be careful with figures of speech like this. That's what's happening here. And so old and young, all the people from every quarter, and they called Lot and said unto him, where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us that we may know them. Here they are. This is forced rape. Maybe it's an initiation. Maybe it's a religious initiation service, because that was part of many religions. And this was made some of these religions very abominable, is some of these practices. And this is not a normal thing. This is not two consenting adults or anything like this. This is men trying to do something, a forced rape, which is probably connected with their religion. And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Calls them brethren, because they were countrymen now, because Lot now is a full-fledged public official in this place. And he doesn't want them to do so wickedly. He says, behold now, I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. They were under his protection, but he offers his daughters. Now I want you to imagine this for a minute, the two daughters standing there hearing their daddy say this. I mean, this is just terrible. One of the things is, you know, when you read this record, it makes you realize God records things, and he's an honest historian. He doesn't cover up the stuff that his own people do. Lot is a righteous man. The New Testament is abundantly clear that Lot is a righteous man. And here he's doing some terrible things, offering up his daughters, to practically be raped. Just a terrible thing. And I will leave it at that, because there's nothing else to say. And then it says in verse 9, and they said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came into sojourn, so you originally came here as a visitor, now you're a judge. In other words, he came in there, and he was, you know, when he was a visitor, and then all of a sudden he moved up in society and became a judge. And he says, now will we deal worse with thee than with them. What a statement that is. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. So this was violence and perversion here. But the men put forth the hand, those two messengers put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut to the door, and they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. Now imagine that. These two messengers had divine powers. They smote them with some kind of blindness or dizziness or whatever it was. And yet, even though these were smitten, they still wanted to carry out their rape. They wearied themselves to find the door. Imagine that. That's how wicked these men were. That even in the presence of divine power, they still wanted to carry out their designs. And the men said unto Lot, "Hast thou here any besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters?" So remember, Lot had two at home, and he had more that were married. And whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place, for we will destroy this place. I want you to know that for a minute. Notice that for a minute. Because later it's the Lord who's going to destroy it, but the Lord's using these messengers. And that's a great principle that we'll talk about more when we get to those verses. He says, "For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it." All right, so we're going to stop there, and we'll pick up in verse 14 next time. This is Dan Sheridan. Hope you enjoyed this study. I sure did. We'll pick it up again next time, and until then, keep searching the Scriptures to see whether these things be so.